I'm an alcoholic. We're going to have a panel on celebrating recovery and family and relationship. And could we open this, stay seated, open up with a serenity prayer, please? God, grant us serenity to accept the things that cannot change, courage to change the things that can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Ralph and Michael and Linda and Bob are going to talk 10 to 15 minutes apiece, and then we'll see if there's time at the end maybe for questions if someone wants to do that, but our plan is to try to contain that to an hour. And with that stimulating subject, and I'm going to give the floor over to Ralph.
My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ralph.
I want to thank so many of you for showing up in the afternoon on a Friday, you know, and don't have a lot of time for preliminary, so I'm going to jump right into it, and I'm not certain where we're going with this, and so thank you, Bob, for having me be the one to set the tone, you know, celebrating the gift of family in recovery, and you know, as I stated, as I just spoke the sentence, some things came to mind. The gift of family and recovery. I'm from a real large family, you know, and it really is a celebration of a gift of family and recovery because I also live the life of family in the life. I have five brothers, you know, and I grew up in a, you know, family has always been important to me. Even though my old man was an alcoholic, you know, and my earliest memory of him was I don't want to be like him. I never saw alcoholism in my house, but I felt the effects of alcoholism in my house. My father was a drunk, you know, he was a stay-away drunk, and he drank away from home. And on paydays, you knew you would never see him. My mom and him broke up when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and she raised six boys by herself. I got an old Southern Baptist mom, and her influence is still felt on me right now. You know, she had not had an education, and she put herself through high school and college, and she took in work, domestic work from other people, and she raised six boys and sent four of us to college. I remember she graduated from college the same year as my brother, who's younger than me. And then she went on to have a career of her own. So I have a real, an influence in my life of a strong, you know, family to me, especially at this time of year, in the Christmas season, I saw some stuff and I started getting real nostalgic because I'm the kind of kid, we didn't grow up with a lot. You know, I told you I had a single family. I had a mom who was raising us by herself. And most of my childhood, early childhood, my mom was on welfare. And later on, she was taking in, you know, clothes that she washed and ironed for other folk. But at Christmas time, you know, I'm the kind of kid, even though we didn't have a lot, it felt like we had everything we needed because it was always a lot of love. It was a lot of cooking. It was a lot of family, you know, and the influence of that. And I never knew a lonely moment. I wouldn't have changed the way I grew up for anything in the world. I had my brothers, and there were six of us. And we, you know, life seemed like it would be good. I was a high achiever, and I went through a lot of stuff. Alcohol found me when I was 16 years old. Didn't have a lot of it. It didn't start having its way with me then. You know, I went off to college and started being pretty successful, and some of my brothers did, and it caught up with me. I love to read Bill's story when it talked about alcohol, when he was talking about being on the golf course, and alcohol caught up with him before he could catch up with what. Alcohol caught up with me, and it started having its way with me. And I started losing things, and me and my five brothers, you know, found ourselves at a certain period where all of us were homeless, and all of us were back in my mom's house, and we almost killed her. You know, and it was really, really, really a dark time. It was a really dark time. I had gotten married. I didn't know what school my little girl was enrolled in. I didn't know where my family was living. You know, I had had a career and I had lost that, and guys like me don't get second chances. You know, and it got real dark. And in October of 1986, I made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the fourth time. and Grace found me on Skid Row in a recovery center in Los Angeles, California, October 11, 1986. Christmas was coming up when I was in that treatment center. I was a next year dad for a long time. Probably some next year parents sitting in here right now. The kind that on Christmas and on birthdays, you know, you sitting wherever it is that you sit and you look at your watch, or in my case, you look at the sun and you think to yourself, right about now they're opening the presents. Next year I'm going to get that girl something. Next year I'm going to get her something. And that October and that Christmas in 1986, they had me in a treatment center, and little did I know, because I was so trifling and I was just so, I could have been drawing unemployment, but you know, for me, I couldn't even get off the block to go down and do that. So I had a lot of benefits coming, and when I went into treatment, they looked into things, and instead of getting me on GR, I started getting disability. They started taking money out of the disability check and they started banking the rest of the money. So while I was in treatment, I would have money when I left. And that December in 1986, I could remember going up in there in the office, and one of the counselors telling me, Ralph, you have X amount of money here. Would you like to get some, you know, for somebody for Christmas? I'm an extravagant guy, and I'm an image guy, and I'm a style over substance guy. I'm really not interested in telling you the truth. I'm just interested in what I can convince you of. You know, that's me. You know, style over the end of the minute. That's who I am, right? And so in the subsequent years, I've had lots of lavish and big and extravagant Christmases. You know how you make up for stuff. But that's what we do with my kid. But that December in 1986... I remember I took out about $60. I didn't have a lot of money. And I went and bought my little girl what in retrospect looks like probably was an ugly little pink jacket with a gray fur collar. But at that time it looked like a mink stole to me. And I bought my girl a Christmas present. First sober Christmas. And she got that present. And from that day to this, for the last 23 Christmases, birthdays, and every other day in between, I've been a this year daddy. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother had been in that treatment program 3 months before me. And in the following Christmas of 1987, got a phone call. I was a year, about 3 months sober. I have a baby brother that had been locked up. And he had come out and he had gone into treatment and he was on the streets. And he had wanted to come back to my mom's house. My brother and I were staying at my mom's house. Both of us had a year sober and we were putting our lives back together. And my baby brother was out in the streets. And I remember him calling and asking if he could come home. And my mom put me on the phone because she didn't want to talk to him. She couldn't handle it. And on Christmas Day, because it was Christmas, she said, yeah, go pick him up. And on Christmas Day in 1987, I drove down the Skid Row where my brother was. And I rolled around the block and I didn't see him. And I rolled around the block and I didn't see him where he said he would be. And I came the third time and a figure jumped out in the street in front of my car waving. And it was him. And you need to know my little brother. He's a pretty boy and he's a primper and he's in the mirror all the time. But this thing that jumped in front of my car didn't look anything like the guy I knew. And he got in my car and I let the windows down and I drove with my head out the window all the way back home. And we got him to my mom's house and my grandmother was over and my mom, she buckled when she saw him because she didn't know her baby boy. She buckled. You know, and my other brother called her, and she said, don't let mama see him, her mother. Don't let my grandmother see him. So we hustled him in the bathroom and threw his clothes away. And he stayed in the bathtub for I don't know how long. And on Christmas Day this year, my baby brother will be celebrating 22 years of recovery. So when you talk about the gift, and Dick, I don't know if this is what Dick had in mind, because he talked about couples up here and the rest of that. You know, after I was sober a little while, another woman found me worthy in the program, and we got married. I have a 14-year-old daughter who's never seen her daddy, loaded him one day at a time. She never will. I've got a 26-year-old daughter who's in the third year of law school at the University of San Francisco. And that's the little girl who I didn't know what school she was enrolled in, and I didn't know where she was living, and I was going in her piggy bank, you know. And from my two little girls, you know, I get a look that men in this fellowship get that I've always wanted to get. Like, this is my daddy and this is my hero. You know, in the last year and a half, a lot of stuff has happened in my life. And my 15-year marriage is gone. And that's been a hurting place for me. And it's been a healing place, and it's been a growing place. And I learned you can grow in the valley. And we both share a fellowship, and I learned some things in there. You know, and we still are family, and we still do what it is that we need to do. And I still reap the benefits and the blessings, you know, of all of what you guys have given me in these years. You know, I don't know if I'm running out of time. 4 years ago, my mother was turned 75 years old. And we almost killed my mom, me and my five brothers up in that house. And she turned 75, and we gave her a surprise 75th birthday party. And we surprised her. Now, if you know my mom, that's a hard thing to do, you know, and we pulled it off. And at the end of the night, we were recounting the events of the day, and we were talking about all that had taken place. And at the end of the night, my mother said something. She said, "Ralph, I want to thank you guys for giving me a party." My mother, you know, is the oldest of her siblings, and she started raising them when she was pretty young. And she started having babies when she was 18, and she started taking care of us. And at the age of 75 years old, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, my mother had her first party. She had her first party. You know, it's lots of things that go on in the rooms. It's lots of lights I see go on all the time. Going to meetings and being a member of this fellowship is now the high point of my own personal life. And each and every one of us, many people that are sitting in here, get the opportunity to see the lights go on. And so for most of us, the high point of our day is seeing a new person get this thing. Seeing a new person grab this thing. In my home group, we have two women at the 7 o'clock meeting that come in every morning with their babies. Both of them just gave birth in the last 3 months, and I look at that and I see it. You know, and when I sit in here right now, talk about celebrating the gift of family recovery, I think of the other lights that go on that we don't always see and we don't know about. It's the lights that's being lit up right now. You know, I'm going to turn it over, but I never take for granted what takes place when we get together in gatherings like this. Talk about the gift of family recovery, because we're doing it right now. We're participating in the gift of family recovery. Every time I go to a meeting, a gathering like this, I get to participate. Me and you, we're doing it right now. Some little boy or some little girl getting ready to have mama come back. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate in some man or some woman getting ready to have a hell of a spouse reenter their life. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate in some family getting ready to have daddy come back home. Every time I go to a meeting, I ask myself, who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? I know I do, and I'm grateful. My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, my name's Michael Earle, and I'm an alcoholic.
Michael.
Well, I thought this was going to be called the family afterward, which would be more appropriate for my family because my family didn't all get sober like your family, Ralph, and I'm really jealous. No, I don't. I know for me, I have been so active in this program, it either will, as far as my family members go, turn them off, because my whole life is about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they don't think that that's living, and they can't do it like I do it. I mean, some of us are sicker than others, and we have to really give this program everything we have. But most people don't have to live, breathe, and eat it. I mean, a lot of people just work with a few people, go to a few meetings, and have pretty good recovery and have church and outside life. Well, that wasn't my case. I just was 100% here in this program. And that turned off my daughter, and that turned off my my brother, one of my brothers. And then I have three brothers, and I have a sister. And I have a daughter. And my daughter got sober for the first time when she was 15 years old, which was a gift beyond gifts. And 3 months after I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my mom came in and she got sober. This was one of the most incredible experiences for my mom and I to come together, because she was absent from the house because of her alcoholism. She was in and out of AA, and she proved to me AA didn't work. So when it came to wanting to get sober, I knew I wasn't going to come here. And she had some boyfriends that were pretty sleazy AA boyfriends, and they would make passes at me. I was 12 or 13. So I had all these conceptions of AA that were not true. So I've got 3 months of sobriety, and my mom comes back into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that's where our relationship really healed. I had 4 wonderful years with her. I mean, she lived a lot longer, but my mom did not get a sponsor. My mom did not work the steps. My mom went to cable producing school, and she became the second cable producer in Long Beach, California. She won a lot of awards. I mean, she was really good, and she did. Her program was called High on Life, and it was all about sobriety. And it's incredible, some of the shows that she put on. But anyway, she started drinking again. She's hanging out with all these other cable producers and going to parties where they have drinking. Doesn't have a sponsor. Didn't work the steps. Doing this program called High on Life. I'm resentful. I mean, I'm just really resentful. And I don't know if I was resentful, but I guess I was. I just thought she was a hypocrite, and I had to tell her so. And then I had to go back and make amends. And so then she changed the name of her cable TV show to Senior City, and that was hilarious. That was so. I never knew my mom had this gift of performance. But what happened with my mom is she had a little bit of notoriety in Long Beach because of getting sober at this time. Now, we're talking about people who came from the streets that slept in cars. And when she came down with cancer, it went away, but she kept doing the same old things, and it came back. And this time she wasn't going to make it. So she decided that she wanted to have her funeral before she died. My mom loved parties, and she didn't want to miss her party. And so my sister and I had what we call the awake wake for my mom. And some of the caterers or somebody like that told the newspaper, and the Independent Press Telegram, which is as big as Los Angeles Times, came to the party. There's cameras, and they're interviewing everybody, and I'm wondering what the heck's going on the next day. On the front page, the whole front page was awake, wake. And it's got a picture of my mom and my daughter, the back of my head, and it tells the story of this woman who's having her funeral before she dies. She ran around the party, and she started singing to everybody, "It's my party, I'll die if I want to." The Associated Press picked up this article. So now it's in the Associated Press, and it's all over the United States. I really was getting resentment now. My mom's drinking, and all these things are happening to her. So it's all over the United States now. And so we start getting these phone calls from all these talk shows. All these talk shows want to get my mom on before she dies. And you know, I wasn't flying, and I was about to start speaking in AA and getting on airplanes, but I wasn't flying. I was too afraid of flying, And they like everything to be dramatic, so my sister wanted to do the show with her. She's the good one in the family. But they didn't want her. She was too normal. So they said it had to be me and my daughter. And so it was her last dying wish, so we went to New York and did the Maury Povich show. And she was on morphine and drinking, and she was just out there. And this producer comes up to me. I'm the only one that doesn't want to be there. He comes up, he says, you know, your daughter's just too hysterical. Your mom's a nut. You're going to have to do all the talking. Don't let there be a silent word. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. Anyway, so it turned out, you put a camera on my mom, and boy, she just, it all pulls together. I mean, she is good on a camera. And anyway, she just did it. She did a darling job. It was a very nice, he was wonderful to her. He was absolutely wonderful to her. And she got up on the Maury Povich show, and she sang her little song, "It's My Party, I'll Die If I Want To, Die If I Want To." And so I have this memory of my mom. I have a video or VCR, whatever you call it, of a show with my mom, my daughter, and I. And it's a beautiful memory because we had so much fun in New York. I just feel like it was a God thing, a gift God gave me, and I couldn't see it at the time. Could not see it at the time. My sister was in the audience, and so they interviewed her in the audience. It turned out really good. But so the Maury Povich show's out, and now we've got CBS wanting to write a script about my mom's life. You know those stories they have for TV? Some dramatic story. And I'm still not getting it. You know, my mom's drinking and she's on morphine. And anyway, Carol Burnett was going to play her part. And they wrote this treatment for the program. And they made my sister and I enemies. My sister and I had a really hard time with that because we're very, very, very close. And Carol Burnett's staff rewrote it. And nothing ever happened with it because my mom died before it could. But it was just, I mean, I was just so bewildered of how all this wonderful stuff could be happening. And she didn't do her steps. She didn't make amends. She didn't do all this stuff. But I feel like the gift was given to me. It was just a beautiful gift that I received. And I developed such a wonderful relationship with my mom. And I got to see all the qualities she had that I never saw before. All I ever thought about was what I didn't want to be like. I didn't want to be like my mom. And I couldn't see the things that she was so good at and the gifts that she brought with her. My brothers, three brothers, they moved to Colorado when my mom got pregnant with my sister. My sister and I are illegitimate, but she did get married and had three boys. And when that marriage ended, the three boys went to Colorado to live with their real dad. So my brothers were my very best friends up until the age of 12. And when they went away, it was really difficult for me. I mean, we were sleeping in cars. You know, it's hard to make friends when you're sleeping in cars. You want to come home with me? No. So it was a lonely, lonely period in my life. But as the boys came back, you know, back to California for this reason, that reason, I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the twin boys were not attracted to this program. And I was working a program, and I wasn't trying to push it on anybody. I was just trying to live the example of a sober woman. And all three of them are drinking very heavily. My one brother, Barry, at the age of 47, all he ever wanted to do was have children. And late in his 30s, he was married to this woman from Ireland, and they had four beautiful children. But in an alcoholic home, you know, Deepax was taking those children away and then bringing them back and taking them away and bringing them back. And my brother is a writer, and he had somebody living with him and his wife who was supposed to do all the sketching that goes in this book he was writing. And, of course, he's having an affair with her, and he thinks he's going to get married to her, and he already has a wife. And DFAX is coming to get his kids, so he fled to Colorado. He and this other woman fled to Colorado so the kids wouldn't be taken away. And in Colorado, in front of the four children, they were 5 through 12, my brother stood up and he dropped dead of a massive heart attack. I mean, he just dropped dead. It was of this disease is what killed him. And it was a very, very dark period because two of his children I was so close to. But at one point, he would not let me see him anymore because he had so many resentments about my activities in Alcoholics Anonymous. And anyway, they're of age now. They moved back to Ireland, and the kids are all coming back into my life one at a time as they're turning 18 years old and 21 years old, and they're just beautiful, and I'm just so happy that they're coming back in my life. But I kept writing my brothers of letters of amends, and I would say, I don't know what I did, Barry, but whatever I did, I'm so sorry. And he would never have anything to do with me. Several years went by, and I'm in Georgia, married, I think about 5 years. And I just thought of my brother, and I thought, I'm just going to make one more attempt. And I picked up the telephone and I called him. And he answered, and I just said, Barry, you know what? I don't know what I did. I don't know what I did. But I wish to God I hadn't done it. And I wish to God you would forgive me, because all I want is to have a brother in my life. And he accepted my amends. And that was a month before he died that we had gotten through that relationship. His brother at the same time, his twin brother, went into the hospital with cirrhosis of the liver. And he was supposed to die, but he didn't. And he's the alcoholic of the type they talk about in the Big Book. Given a good reason, they can quit. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, they can still quit on their own. And that was a good reason for him. His brother just dropped dead. And he had cirrhosis of the liver, and he hasn't had a drink since. And my youngest brother watched the two others, cirrhosis, one dropped dead, and he called me. He's sleeping in bushes and stuff. And he came to Georgia, and he got sober in Georgia. And he's been there for a lot of years. He's married now. He holds down a full-time job. And I can really see the miracle of this program working my life and my family's life. And I never, ever thought I would see that, especially what I went through with my mom. But I just love this program more than I love my own life. I'd do anything for this program. And I don't know if we have any newcomers here, but I hope you just keep coming back until you find out why we keep coming back. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Linda Bazans, and I'm a grateful member of the L&N family group. And thank you, Ralph, and thank you, Michael, and thank you, I think, for the opportunity to be here today. I love the topic, celebration of the gift of family recovery. And I came to Al-Anon kicking and screaming. I did not want to be here. I did not want to have to be here. I didn't like anything about it. I it was his problem. It wasn't my problem. I don't know why I had to go. I found out later why I had to go, because I according to my first sponsor, I had my own brand of craziness that I brought into the marriage, and I had to deal with that. But I didn't get that at first. We did not have active drinking in our marriage. Bob has been sober almost as long as we've been married. And but we had alcoholism. We had alcoholism, and it wasn't untreated. Bob was using, you know, he was going to meetings. I definitely had untreated Al-Anonism, because I was going to meetings also, but for the wrong reason. The reason I was going was to look good, and a good wife would support their husband and go to Al-Anon. That's why I was there, 2 meetings a week. But I became more and more and more resentful. I am so grateful for Bob's disease of alcoholism. Because if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have been given the tools to become who I am today. I would have, I don't know what I'd be like, but it wouldn't be very pretty. I wouldn't look very good. I wouldn't be very happy. And then we were given three beautiful sons. And when the first one was, I don't know, probably around 15 or 16, 14, who knows, he started drinking and he started using marijuana. And, you know, we did everything we could to try to control him and help him. And finally got him evaluated, and because of the grace of God, he sobered up when he was 18 years old. Our second son is only 2 years younger, and he was doing about the same thing at about the same time. I think he started pretty much with Bill. I think Bill introduced him to chemicals, but Peter liked it a lot real fast. And we had just about all the fun we could have with Peter until he got sober. I mean, we just didn't know what to do. When it's your children, not that I didn't ever take Bob's alcoholism seriously, because as I matured, I did. But I think I always had the idea that I could always leave him. That was not what I wanted to do, but I could always get out. But when it's your kids, I don't know how you get out. I don't know how you get out, and I don't know, you don't want to get out. You just want them to get better. And I had to get honest about that too. Not only did I want them to get better, but children that are using are very inconvenient. And I had to look at that. I did. Because, you know, I could have been that long-suffering, And I, like I said, we had about as much fun as we wanted to have. But our children were pretty wild. And they could have been a lot worse. Don't get me wrong. I'm so glad. And our son Peter, he sobered up when he was 19. And then we have another son who's, there's a 11 and an 8-year difference or something like that between Bill and Peter, who are 2 years apart, and then Daniel. And all of a sudden, when Daniel was probably about 12 or 13, it became clear he was using alcohol and drugs. Not alcohol, excuse me. He never used alcohol because he never wanted to be an alcoholic. And I think that's when it hit me the hardest, because here we had these other two kids and they're sober, you know. But would we be, first of all, I'm screaming at God, how come we have three kids? I mean, come on, the odds. Three out of three. This is not fair. Who cares? We had it. But I am. I am just irate. No. But the thing that was the hardest was, would we get another miracle? And that's what I was afraid of. I was afraid we wouldn't get that third miracle. And we did. And Daniel, this last May, celebrated 11 years. Oh, yeah. You know, but I mean, don't give up before the miracle. And, you know, ride it out. And if you've got kids that are going along the path, God is good. And I know that all the kids don't make it. I wish, you know, I could say they all make it, and they don't all make it. But you know what? If you get involved in Al-Anon, which at that point, I mean, I went back to newcomers. They didn't have newcomer meetings when Bill came in, but they had them when Peter and Dan came in. And I don't know how many years in Al-Anon. I had something like 22 when Peter got sober. I was back in those newcomers. I was just as crazy as I ever was. Any wisdom, I had the program behind me, but I was so afraid. I'm back in those newcomer meetings, and then when Daniel came in, I knew where to go back. Step up your meetings and go back to the newcomer meetings. And in our area, newcomer meetings are step 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, over and over and over. And that's what you need, because you're so afraid. And we have a daughter-in-law who is in the program. And we are like a walking meeting if we go on a trip. We are so blessed. I have, I'll let Bob speak for himself. Yeah, I know. That's one of our jokes. Everything, Bob talks about his honeymoon. And so I said to him, you have a pronoun problem. So I just got that. But my relationship with our children is absolutely incredible. And that is only because of AA, Al-Anon, working the steps, and living in the solution, and their sobriety. But we can have an argument, or, you know, mother-son thing. And I'm not kidding you, I can almost look at my watch, and within 20 minutes, one of us is calling. Either I'm calling them and saying, you know, I was really out of line. And I'm not going to do that again, and this is what I did that I don't like, and I'm sorry I did that. Or I get a call from them. And, you know, it doesn't get much better. So the celebration is what it's about when you come to these programs and you get it. And I came for the wrong reasons for a long time, but thank God I got it. And then the gift of sobriety. I do not take that for granted. At least I sure hope I don't. And if I do, I hope someone reminds me. Because it is a gift. You know, we can do all the right things and not everyone gets the gift. I think everyone is offered the gift of sobriety, but I don't think everyone opens the box. I don't think God says your kids are going to get it and your kids aren't. Or your husband's going to get it and your mom's not. But I do believe that the grace is given us, and if we accept that grace, we're able to open the box of recovery. And then recovery. You know, I am recovering from having a rotten attitude. I'm recovering from being proud and arrogant and not knowing what I'm doing. I'm recovering from trying to manipulate other people to get my way. I was just saying to someone, I think it was Carol, my favorite thing is when you do what I want and you like it. Or you think it's your own idea. But I really try not to force solutions. So I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I'm a blessed woman. I'm a happy person. I try really hard to mind my own business. But I try really hard to stay in the program and to be grateful and to live in that gratitude. And I didn't know where this was going, but I'll tell you, I'm grateful for the opportunity to sit here with these three people with me and to share to all of you. So share with all of you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
The cold, when you said, even though I was sober, we still had alcoholism, untreated alcoholism. That was the ass in the family. What we discovered with the three boys becoming alcoholic and myself is we think Linda's a carrier. None of us were alcoholic when we met her. And it's kind of like Tomaine Mary or whatever they... Typhoid Mary doesn't get it, but she carries it. In addition to our three sons, my father got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous after me. And I have a brother that's 30 years sober. And sundry other people in our family. I got sober when I was 24 years old, by a week. Came in when I was 23. Diagnosed when I was 19. My story is essentially I've been born on third base. I've been congratulating myself for hitting a triple. I came from an intact family. My mother, who would be 100 years old today if she were alive, you know, got a college degree in the 30s in business, which was unusual for a woman. She had a tongue like a razor. She was, I'm one of seven kids. we're all very close, and we have a great relationship. I'm the sixth generation of alcohol in our family that we can identify. And so it's really a, you know, genetic thing. I started drinking when I was 13, and I got in trouble almost immediately and just couldn't stop it. And I walked out of Notre Dame in the middle of my senior year. I was good enough to get opportunities, but not well enough to ever to be able to complete them. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you feel like you're giving something up. You feel like you're, you know, I had no idea what it was. The gift for me when I came to AA is I loved AA. A lot of people don't like AA. The gift was, so it's never been hard for me to stay because I like you and it and the meetings. It's been hard for me to do the work, but it's not been hard for me to stay. And life is only relationship. That's all there is. And relationships are a mirror. The world reflects back to you how you are, and it reflects it back in relationships. You create the space in which everybody else in your life stands. The most important thing about primary relationships, and I think more today than at any other time since I've been alive, people are sometimes encouraged that they do not have to maintain the primary relationships, that they can discard a parent or separate from a child, or and there are circumstances where that's necessary and appropriate. I'm not speaking like in all circumstances. But I'm generally a believer that if your primary relationships are not okay in your life, other relationships will not be okay in your life. They are just so profound, and they are just, they draw to the very core of our being. And the reason they are so difficult is they're all emotional based, and they're inescapable. You can change boyfriends or girlfriends or political parties or schools or bosses, but you can't change children and you can't change parents. And we are people who can do the extraordinary, but we have trouble doing the ordinary. We can get married, we can't stay married. We have jobs, but often not careers. We can get in school, but can't finish school. We can have cars, but no insurance. and all of us have one or two kind of wonderfully extraordinary, wonderful things that we've done in our lives. But the fact is that we have trouble being ordinary. Many of us have trouble being ordinary. What I think is when you are put in a situation where you become a husband and then a father, I mean, you are put in situations where you're put up in front of things you just never been exposed to and you can't get out of. And you are called upon to make changes and sacrifices that are not ordinary. And your defects of character are going to come to the front clearly in that process. And I think that in many of us, early in that process, I mean, because it's painful. I mean, we were joking. of my five high school friends, four are in AA and one's in Al-Anon. And three or four of us were having, and they've got 35 years of sobriety. I think the least has 30 years of sobriety. And our son Bill came over at the table three or four of us were having dinner with a couple, and he'd just been married, and I think he maybe just had their first grandchild. And he was talking about how he always thought that marriage was difficult, and he was just shocked that their first year of marriage wasn't duck soup, and we all just broke out laughing. I mean, because the adjustments that most of us had in our first year of marriage was terrible. I mean, you know, because you really kind of start confronting all the things that you can't escape, and you know, you're in front of the defects of character and the sorts of things. And what has been so wonderful for me And so I came in early, and I loved AA, and I did what most of us do. In the first couple of years, I made some enormous changes in my sobriety, which allowed me to continue my sobriety. But I think, and I'll talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, I think that most of us have kind of a second coming awake process that happens somewhere between 5 and 12 years of sobriety. You can't get it all done in the first few years. We make astounding changes in our lives early on in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the more subtle things, you know, the things that if you had your family sit down and do your inventory, not you. or if you had your boss sit down and do your inventory and not you. Or your brothers and sisters sit down and do your inventory and not you. And most of us wouldn't particularly want to read that. Those are the sorts of things that get handed to you, and if you're continuing to grow, which is not the case of all of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, but if you're continuing to grow, you're becoming more awake. 12-step said having a spiritual awakening. As you become more awake, you become more conscious. As you become more conscious, you become more aware, and you're in a spiritual process, and in that process, you run into what's in your way, and then you have a choice. And they're not easy choices, and it's subtle, because the things that we deal with later on in our sobriety are not as obvious as some of the illegal and inappropriate and unsustainable things we did in our drinking or in our very early sobriety. They are more subtle. They're more like personality traits. But they rob us of, I mean, that's what gets in the way of our continuing to be married. That's what gets in the way of our continuing to stay employed where we are. I mean, they're very important, and they have to do, I think, with whether or not we end up with the full measure of what the program has to offer, and whether or not we step up when Bill talks about, you know, when he talks about humility. Not only is it having some grasp of who we are, but some sort of willingness to attend about who we could be. And I think that that's the question. For many of us. And I think that that's what happens to us in relationships. And I look at some of these young guys that I sponsor that they keep occasionally taking captives. And as soon as the relationship gets difficult, that's a sign to them that something's wrong. You know, they go through the erotic phase of the relationship, which is, you know, pretty wonderful for them. And they get through the erotic part and they start coming into the conflict issues. And as soon as the conflict issues, they start to pull apart rather than increase the relationship, which is what I think the universe is requesting, that we put God in the relationship and enlarge the relationship. They don't put God in the relationship, and they reduce the relationship, which is what most of us don't have the option to do in marriage. And I think the thing that is so wonderful about the program is that a higher power is central to the program. And when a higher power is central to your life, it alters every relationship you have. Nothing becomes... Linda has been, you know, an extraordinary partner. I mean, to have someone who's been an Al-Anon 42 years, and I've been an AA 42 years, in 4 days I will be an AA 42 years. Six. What, 6 more days? Oh, thank you, Linda. I'm sorry. It's a little chicken shit, but that's okay. I mean, 2 days. But the difference is that when we have conflict, we still have an eye on our part, which is what allows the space for us to be together. The other thing that is so is because we're both reasonably serious about our relationship is we're reasonably healthy. And because we're reasonably healthy, we don't have all the attention. We can have some attention that is not on ourselves. And I think that that is the largest single reason. I don't think we'd be together if it wasn't for the program. My first 7 or 8 years in sobriety were erratic at best. And Linda... You know, some of the sacrifices she made early on. I wasn't a very good parent. I wasn't very attentive. I was in AA at every opportunity that I had. I wasn't at the games. I didn't do a lot of the things that fathers do today. I wasn't a lot of things that I wish I were early in sobriety. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great. And Linda was 21 years old when we started out, and all of a sudden all our friends are 50. you know, I'm going to a meeting every night of the week, and our whole lives are kind of turned upside down, and it was invisible to me that she really gave up the college buddies, and all of a sudden people stop asking us out because I'm busy all the time. I'm gone all the time. I'm at AA all the time. And it's, you know, and when I am with them, I'm talking about AA all the time. Wasn't quite that bad, but it was close. I think the Bob White, who was my mentor in Alcoholics Anonymous, he once said, I never knew how to be a father. I never knew how to be a husband. I never knew how to be successful in business. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was directed into the program, and I started doing the steps. And as a result of doing the steps and focusing my attention on the principles of the steps, as a result, I'm a pretty good husband. As a result, I'm a pretty good father. As a result, I've got a decent career. Without having the intention of being that I've got a place that I can go to have a conversation that started 42 years ago, and I'm still having the conversation with you about how to live my life. And you encourage me. You are my village. So when I have a tough time, it's just my turn. I'm on the team. I haven't had a tough time for a while. It's my turn. And I know that when it's my turn, you're watching to see how I do. And you're wishing me well in the process. I have other examples of people who have had long marriages and had troubles throughout them and taken them on with larger problems than we ever dreamed of having. But to be able to have a program that isn't like most of the people on the street, I think our program is about abstinence. And we know it is about living in such a way that we don't have to go back to drinking. And to be forced to take a set of principles and live them in such a way that allows us to live with the grace and dignity and allows us to maintain relationships that without the principles in our program. And don't we all have people who you almost wish you could drag to AA? I mean, who are, you know, who have trouble living life and just, you know, if they ever had the opportunity to, if you could plunk them into a meeting, to be able to have the steps, sponsorship, the meetings, the conversation, the things to do. I mean, most people whose lives are falling apart, they don't know what to do. In an AA, we don't always know what to do. And, you know, if someone grabbed us real quick and said, what are we supposed to do? Maybe we wouldn't know. But we have a sense in general that if you get into the book and you try to take the steps and you get someone whose life is in pretty good shape and you ask questions and you get advice and you stay in the center of AA, it will work out. And in that conversation over a lifetime, you will start gaining some wisdom and strength, and you will start to have the ability to do something that we've never been able to do, to be able to live life on life's terms, to be able to be there for each other. And the reason I know fundamentally, I mean, and when I said I was born on third base, I had an example that my job was to take care of my wife. I didn't do a very good job of that the first 6 years or 7 years in our sobriety, but I've done a pretty damn good job of it the last 30. And I've done a better job the last 20-some years of being a father to our children, and our relationships are great. And there's only one reason for that, is that I've changed. I was a rambunctious and angry father, and I had a tape, you know, I don't have time to get into that, but the other day I was on an airplane and there was a screaming baby behind me, two rows, and it really was, that used to be a sound that I promise you I just could not be around. And the reason I couldn't be around it is I was somewhat abusive as a father. And I sat there and it didn't bother me at all. At all. And I thought, isn't that nice that you gentle down, that you gentle down. And it's like water on stone. You don't even know how it happens. You take a little bit of the puzzle, you know, and Michael's got my ear, Ralph's got my nose, you've got my hands, and I put the puzzle together. I don't even know what the pieces are, I guess, because they're upside down, but little by little over a period of time in this conversation and in this program, it comes together. It's not perfect, but it is strong. It is deep. And it really works. So all there is in life is relationships. Relationships are the mirror that reflect ourselves back to ourselves. When we're irresponsible, we tend to think that relationships are what people do to us. The more responsibility we take, the more we see that relationships reflect. The universe is reflecting back to us how it works and how it doesn't work. And as we gain the wisdom and we gain the courage to be able to attend to the message that is being subtly given to us, we can put those to work into the program and use the principles to do that, and we will have the peace and joy and the full measure. So to be able to express the gratitude that Linda and I have for having, you know, I think the boys and the three boys and myself have 97 years of sobriety. My sponsor and I have 97 years of sobriety. My partner and I have 94 years of sobriety. No, 90, I don't know, 90 years of sobriety. Everything that I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. We done? Yeah, why don't we just, we'll shut the meeting part of it down. If anybody has either a sharing or a question, be happy to have. We'll do that for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and then we'll.
10
minutes.
Dalinon takes charge.
No, he signaled. I'm not.
Full baloney.
She is the boss.
Hi, my name is Michael Austin. I'm an alcoholic from Nashville, Tennessee, and thank you very much for this meeting today. Just wanted to talk a little bit about my family and how it has grown in recovery in the last just a little over 2 years. One day when I was real young, I stayed home from school, and I grew up, you know, we call this a family disease, and it runs deep in my family. And I was living in the disease of alcoholism at an early age, and I stayed home from school one day. I just asked my mom, you know, there was no real reason. I just said, I just don't want to go to school today, and happened to stay home. And my dad, who was suffers from the disease of alcoholism and died from this disease, was at home, and my mom was at home that day, and she put a steak knife into his back, and I'm thankful today that I was home that day, because it could have been a lot worse. I mean, it was a superficial wound. It wasn't that detrimental. Except it, you know, I guess the wound was probably deeper in me than it was in my dad. And then about 4 years ago, I had mentioned to my mom, who's been in Al-Anon for 20-something years, I don't know exactly, and she's been a member of Al-Anon for a long time. And I used to always say, yeah, because my dad was an alcoholic. But I know that that's not true today. But I had mentioned to her, you know, I can't stop drinking and I think I have a problem. And she said, you think you have a problem with alcohol? I didn't know that. And I was like, still those blinders had been on and I'm approaching 40. And she didn't realize that I had a problem with alcohol, yet I had left home at the age of 16 and didn't talk to her for 13 years of my life there, give or take. But she sent me some pamphlets in the mail, and they went right in the trash. But today I'm a little over 2 years sober, and she and I have such a wonderful relationship that she called me this week to tell me that she's doing okay after having her hip replaced. And today she and I can talk on the phone, and we can love each other. And just how that's only by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I'm Keith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Keith.
This year, I celebrated my first year in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm working on my second year, and hopefully it'll be my last second year. But I got a home group, Dick's home group, the Macklin group, just a few months ago, and it's a very powerful group, and I really kind of fell in love with it almost immediately, and I got to celebrate my birthday there, and I didn't have anybody to give me my chip that night, so I got this guy that, you know, the only guy I really kind of knew from other groups to give me the chip, you know, and I thought, you know, because I'd been to Augusta and I'd listened to Scott and Bob's tapes and everything, and I'd really been sharing some good stuff that I'd heard from them and from other places and really beautiful things in meetings and really got into the book, that he might share some miraculous things that I'd shared in meetings and how good I was, you know, my sobriety and stuff like that was. And he didn't do that. He got up there and he got ready to give me my chip. I had really no idea what he was going to say, but he said, I've known Keith for about a year. He's been coming to this meeting for a while that we go to, another group that we've been going to. And I'd been bringing my daughter to this meeting because, you know, I didn't have anywhere else to take her. And he said one of the biggest thing that impressed him was the relationship that he saw between me and my daughter. And I was like, man, you know, I couldn't have thought a more wonderful thing for anybody to share about me. And you know, I got this tremendous ego anyway. I like people to say good stuff about me, but, you know, when you start talking about my daughter, or even better still, you know, the relationship with my daughter, you know, that's powerful stuff. And the truth be told, I didn't do that. You know, left to my own devices, I probably wouldn't even know my daughter right now. But thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and the friends that I've made here and the baby steps that I've made here, I have a lot of fun with my daughter, and I get to be her hero, and she never has to see me the way she saw me a few years ago again. And I just figured that was relevant to this meeting. But anyway, thank you for listening to me.
Thank you.
Michael wants to end the meeting.
I'm going to complete the meeting. I want to just share a little thing about my sister, the normal, perfect one. After my mom died, I had to speak at the Pacific group, and that's the group in Los Angeles, Clancy's group. And there's always between 1,300, 1,700 people. And I was just scared to death, and I asked my sister if she wanted to go with me. And a group of us went, but my sister's completely normal, and she's sitting in the front row. When we first got there, I mean, in the Pacific group, everyone dresses up. They wear their sobriety. It's very attractive. It was very attractive to my sister. And they all went up and talked to her and welcomed her and fussed over her. And as I was up there talking and sharing about graduating from high school when I was 36 years old, certain things I said, I could see tears rolling down my sister's face. And after I was finished sharing my story and I sat down, my sister looked at me and she said, God, I wish I was an alcoholic. I think that's such a beautiful, beautiful testament of this program. Thank you.
And would everybody stay in place and hold hands, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.